It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Have you had food poisoning before? Something to think about when the CDC estimates that each year 48 million people get sick from a foodborne illness and 3,000 people die. Tainted food is in the headlines every day. Beef recalled for salmonella. Romaine lettuce pulled off the shelf last month for E. coli. Let's bring in Jerry Barak. She is an associate professor in the Department of Plant Pathology at UW-Madison and a bacteriology committee chair with the American Phytopathological Society. Jerry, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Well, we've been hearing about the lettuce pulled off the shelf for E. coli. We heard beef being recalled. How often is the food we produce becoming contaminated with this kind of bacteria?
That's a good question. In truth, foodborne illness is not as common as you might think, because if you think about the number of salads that people are consuming or the number of hamburgers that are consumed every day in the United States, foodborne illness is actually not common, but it really makes the headlines because it surprises people, I think, in particular when it's associated with produce, raw produce.
Are there some more common causes of foodborne illnesses? What are the types out there?
Well, salmonellosis, as we've been hearing about with the contaminated beef and the Shigatoxin E. coli with romaine. Also, not so long ago, we had listeriosis with contaminated cantaloupes. And these are some of the big ones that are causing problems.
How does food become contaminated in the first place?
That's another good question. So people have to remember that our produce is grown outside. And so when our environment becomes contaminated or these organisms naturally survive in the environment where agricultural production occurs, they can come into contact with these pathogens and it is very difficult to remove them.
What about the water that we spray on crops? Is that another issue?
Yes. So irrigation water has been implicated in some situations as being sources or routes of contamination for produce that is not going to be cooked.
What can we do then to make sure that there are so many variables that hit these crops, right? There's the water, there's the soil, there's then what happens in perhaps a packaging facility. So where do we start when we're looking at foodborne illnesses to keep this food safe?
Well, I think that the producers are doing a lot of things to reduce the incidence or the contamination that can occur. The leafy green producers and the tomato producers have put into place a lot of ways to reduce the contamination routes. And there have also been some federal regulations that have now come on board. So everyone is doing the same thing. And I think producers are really trying hard. Farmers aren't out to make people sick. They want to have a healthy crop, and they want people to enjoy this type of food.
Because I'm sure that when you have an E. coli outbreak and you're seeing all this romaine lettuce destroyed, that's going to impact farmers as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so consumption of raw produce, the consumer has to accept the fact that it can be risky. It is grown outside, and if you're not going to cook it, you have to accept that there is a little bit of risk there. However, the consumer can do something on their own as well, is they can do their best to buy the best looking produce, the healthiest looking produce, and perhaps maybe those bags of leafy greens, we could treat it a little bit more like ice cream. If you were buying ice cream in the store, that's probably the last thing that you put in your cart, especially, you know, on a hot day, and then you get it right home immediately. But we don't really think about the fact that those bagged lettuces, you know, they are chilled in the grocery store, but a lot of times you put it into your cart first, and then you go around the store, and that temperature abatement is could be a possible problem and give microorganisms the opportunity to grow.
So even like bag lettuce that has gone through a packaging facility and you threw it in your cart right when you got in the grocery store, and now you're going to go around the store and then put it in your car, and perhaps it's a hot summer day and it's been in the trunk for that drive, that could impact that lettuce.
Well, it gives the microbes an opportunity to start growing more rapidly. There is a absolute reason why we keep the leafy greens and the lettuces in a chilled environment. From the point that they leave the processing plant to the point of the consumer purchase, they're kept at a low temperature.
Talking with Jerry Barak, she's an associate professor in the Department of Plant Pathology at UW-Madison. We're talking about foodborne illness and how bacteria evolve and get on our food and what makes us sick when that happens. Last month, the CDC warned that no one in the U.S. should eat any romaine lettuce at all, and they tried to pinpoint the source for the E. coli outbreak. That warning was later lifted when they figured out it was to a particular region in California. But how did that initial warning from the CDC strike you? Was it out of the ordinary?
It was quite unusual. The CDC had not done that before, but I think we were approaching a very large food holiday in the United States, and I think that consumers and even producers appreciate the fact that going in a more conservative way, the CDC put that out, allowed people to make their own choices, and I think that it was the right move.
How do food safety officials start to suspect that a food may be contaminated by bacteria?
So we have a pretty good idea of the background levels of foodborne illness that occur regionally and in every state. And this is information that is provided by public health state labs. And when there is an uptick in the types of salmonellosis or Shigatoxin E. coli, this information is uploaded and can be seen across the country and by the CDC and the FDA, and that triggers warnings that there could be an outbreak that's occurring.
Oh, so you can start to map this and really see where it is on a map.
Absolutely. And when you see the same types of salmonella or the same types of E. coli in Wisconsin and California or Oregon, then that is a signal that there could be an outbreak occurring.
What are researchers doing to try to keep food safer? Are there advancements you're seeing here in the industry?
Absolutely. There's obviously a lot of interest in identifying when produce is contaminated before it even leaves the processing plant. And so there's a big push to improve our ability to detect contamination rates. These are going to be very low rates. The numbers of bacteria that exist on leafy greens or on raw produce is very, very small, and it's really a needle in a haystack. And so there's a big effort to try and identify that before it even leaves the processing facilities.
Well, a needle in a haystack, and you're looking at how many inspections have to occur and then a number of people that have to be watching for these things. Are we even able to regulate that?
Well, the producers are doing a lot of self-regulation. Mm-hmm. They do a lot of funding to researchers and in-house to try and improve their capacity to identify these risks and these contaminations. And they're also doing, scientists and producers are looking at preventing contamination in the first place, on-farm practices. How can we reduce the pathogens reaching the produce in the first place? Because that's where the contamination, for the most part, is occurring, not in the packing plants, but out in the fields.
Are there any novel things happening out in the fields that you see are really big improvements?
I think there's been a lot of focus on the quality of the water that's being used for irrigation. There's also been some effort of of keeping animals out of the production area. I mean, you can't keep birds out or those types of animals, but reducing the risk of moving the pathogens into the agricultural production area or increasing the quality of the water that's used for irrigation, or at least monitoring the water and knowing when there's a possibility that it could be a risk factor.
Can you leave us with some tips? Is there anything that we can do to avoid consuming foods that may be contaminated?
I think that consumers should buy the healthiest looking produce that they can in the marketplace. I think that they should treat it like it's a product that can deteriorate very quickly. I think that they should maybe treat it like the ice cream and get it home and get it into a cold environment as soon as possible. And just acknowledge the fact that that there is some risk in the consumption of this product. But considering the number of salads that we're eating every day, this is a healthy product. This is good for us. But just being cognizant that you know, if you are an immunocompromised person or someone that this could be an issue for, just take care.
Well, Jerry, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Jerry Brock is an associate professor in the Department of Plant Pathology at UW-Madison and a bacteriology committee chair with the American Phytopathological Society. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.